NXT show, starring Zim.
Welcome to the ProWrestling.net NXT recap. I'm Zach Zimmerman, and today we're going through the show that aired on July the 29th, 2015, taped a couple weeks ago, July the 16th at Full Sail University. Before we get into this week's show, though, this is an all-access audio, which means that even you freeloaders are able to listen to it. And because of that, it means I have to point you to the direction of ProWrestling.net membership. You're familiar with ProWrestling.net, obviously. Go to the homepage. At the top of the homepage, you'll see a membership info link. On that page, you will see essentially a list of everything that I'm about to tell you right now. But at the bottom of that, there is a .net members sign-up page right there in blue. You can click on that, and it'll take you right to where you need to go. But what is ProWrestling.net membership, you might be asking? Well, you've probably heard one of these plugs before, but you're going to hear it again. .net membership is just kind of a very much enhanced version of what you guys are getting on the ad-based site. You're going to get ad-free access to the website. There's going to be no advertisements anywhere on the page. No pop-ups, no banner ads, no takeover ads, no video ads, absolutely nothing. It's all content, the entire site, completely easy to navigate. It's great. Once you go ad-free, I mean, that's worth it in and of itself. But not only that, I mean, this is where the real money lies, is the audio that you get. You get full access to all of the audio shows we do every single week, recaps of all the television shows and pay-per-views, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Impact, Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, and like I said, every pay-per-view that airs. We also have the weekly, the .NET Weekly Audio Show, which is our flagship broadcast. I will be joining Jason Powell this week on the show. To discuss mainly the WWE conference call, but I'm sure you've also got a couple of the tidbits of news and information to go over there. And in addition to that, you will get Will Pruitt and Jake Barnett's Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. You will get myself, Will Pruitt, and his wife Christy Pruitt on Millennials with Attitude, which is getting pretty rave reviews this early on in its run. We've only done maybe four episodes by this point, maybe five, I think four. But those have all gotten really, really rave reviews. People are having a lot of fun with it. We're having a lot of fun doing it. So I highly recommend you check that show out. In addition to that, you'll also every once in a while, you know, whenever there's big breaking news, Jason Powell will jump on the audio with what he calls quick hits audio. It's usually just anywhere from, 5 to 15 minute quick little recap and rundown of whatever the major news is. And then, you know, you can be sure that we'll get into it more detail in one of the main audio shows. So, I mean, audio, ad-free access to the website, that's where the money's at. ProWrestling.net membership, guys, it's all about it. You also get access to the members forum. It's a, good group of guys in there. It's a good place to go have a wrestling discussion, but I don't know. I'm kind of not, I love our forum, but I mean, hey, in the age of Twitter, it's like, yeah, I don't know, Twitter's awesome. Speaking of which, you can follow me on Twitter at .NetZim. And with all that plugs, all that disgusting plugginess out of the way, let's jump right into the episode of NXT that aired on July the 29th. This was an episode that was dedicated, almost entirely to crafting for, really the first time, a tag division. It was like, I guess there were kind of small signs of it coming out of the last taping with some new teams coming into the fold. But I mean, I thought this episode, more than any other episode ever, really kind of tried to establish, hey, there are a few viable tag teams in this division. And this may be the kickoff of that. I mean, I guess it was effective even more because they main evented the show with the tag title match. So I think it made it feel a little bit bigger deal, considering that, on a normal week when it feels like there is no tag division, when they have a tag title match, it's just like whatever. But here it felt like, oh, there is a tag title tag division in the works, and so this title match means something. So I enjoyed that as a trend throughout the show. There were some other things I didn't like so much, and we'll get into those as we get through it. After the opening video, we came into the arena where Enzo More, Colin Cassidy, and Carmella made their entrance. Enzo's new pants are, they have the 100 emoji on them, which is pretty funny. He cut their usual promo on their way to the ring, and then he got in the ring and said they're going to keep it 100. And then Cassidy delivered the SAWFT line to close. The duo of Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder around the live tours and I think even an enhancement match or two, these two were known as the Mechanics, but there was no sign of the Mechanics name here. They were just Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder. The graphic on the screen just said Dash and Dawson, so I don't know if that's what they're going with, but they're not the Mechanics. And the first match of the night was surprisingly good. I mean, grading on the NXT tag division curve, I mean, this was a hell of a match, actually. I mean, it wasn't, but it was completely competent and actually pretty damn entertaining from beginning to end. Mechanics looked really good here. They got the better of Enzo Amore, and then Cass came in and cleared house. But like I mentioned, Dawson and Wilder looked good. They had a couple of fun spots. Dawson used a nice hammerlock, bridging Northern Light suplex, and they used a couple of good tandem tag team moves. Dawson also used the snap, slingshot snap suplex. Then the babyfaces rallied. Cassidy came in and cleared house, like I was saying. Just ran wild, knocked one guy off the apron with a big boot, hit Dawson with a big swinging side slam. Enzo had been taking a beating for most of the match, so he was actually at ringside selling, like, just that he was out. He was just dead at ringside. And so Cass runs wild, goes crazy on everybody, hits his big slam, and now it's time to hit their finish. He yells, "Enzo!" And Enzo's dead at ringside. So what does Carmella do? Carmella picks him up and starts slapping him in the face to wake him up. Enzo snaps to life and he drags himself to the top turnbuckle. I thought that was hilarious. The crowd cracked up over it. So he goes up to the top turnbuckle looking to hit their rocket launcher finish, but the mechanics manage to reverse. And a few moments later, Dawson and Wilder hit their finisher, which they call the Shatter Machine. It's basically like a 3D into a code breaker. It's so like a flapjack, and then instead of catching the guy in the cutter, Dawson catches the guy in a code breaker. Pretty sweet looking move when they connect on it right. Dawson and Wilder over Enzo and Cass. I mean, I would call this an upset win in about 6.5 minutes, and I think the crowd considered it an upset too because they booed loudly. I mean, they really, really liked Enzo and Cass, but I don't think that they were expecting this finish. So Dawson and Wilder getting kind of the upset win, the crowd was booing them. So, I mean, I don't think it was a boo as in like we disapprove. I think it was, this crowd is willing to play along with certain things like that, and so I think it was like boo, like these new guys came in and beat the team that we really like. And so I thought this was a pretty good kickoff to Dawson and Wilder's run. I think between them and the team of Gable and Jordan, which we saw kick off a couple weeks ago, a couple other things they have going on. I don't know. I mean, there's some semblance of a tag division forming here, and not just the complete benchmark of mediocrity that this tag division has been in the past. This might be fun with some of these teams if they give them a serious chance going forward. We had Charlotte versus Dana Brooke hyped for later on the show. Vaudevillains versus Blake and Murphy hyped in the main event for the tag titles, of course. And then we went backstage. Apparently, this was taped last week. It was Devon Taylor interviewing Chad Gable and Jason Jordan a week after their successful debut as a team. Jason Jordan said even though they don't see eye to eye, they get the job done. They know how to go out there and take care of business. They don't play any games. Then Gable took over and he just ran down Enzo and Cass. He said they don't have to talk a lot of trash like Enzo and Cass do. They just go out there and get business, take care of business. Ran down the Hype Bros. Thank God, anybody who runs down the Hype Bros is kosher by me. Gable then wanted Jordan to deliver the because Gable said basically that we will be ready, willing, and then he goes, "Say it, Jason." And Jason's like, "Not a chance." And then Gable goes, "Ready, willing, and Gable." So he finished it himself. I don't know, some kind of fun chemistry they're starting to put together here. But as something I'll get into in their match a little bit more, I hope they're not gonna start teasing like tension between them this early. Like if they want to be, a little bit of an odd couple tag team with have certain spots that involve them maybe miscommunicating and in promos like this where Jordan won't bite on things, that's fine. But in their match, they almost teased a little bit like miscommunication, like where it almost cost them the match, that kind of thing. And it's like, this is their second or third week as a unit. Like, let's slow your roll. Let's let them have a good 6 months or a year at least before we start doing anything like that. And let's not even do anything like that because, hell, what if these guys are the next great tag team? Like, how are you going to start building tension between them a week into their run? Slow your roll. This was kind of cool actually. It looked like the WWE Tap Out commercial was going to air, the new clothing line that WWE partnered with. It looked like that was going to air, but when it got to Charlotte's spot in the in the commercial, it kind of cut out and it turned into a Dana Brooke promo. Like it freezed on Charlotte doing something and I think it was like Dana Brooke's voice just going, "Are you kidding me?" or something like that, and then it transitioned into a Dana Brooke Charlotte hype video, just kind of building up their match later in the show. This was awesome. This the way they did this. What it led to in the match is the biggest negative in maybe in recent memory on NXT, and I'll get into that when we get into their match. Anyway, we came back into the arena, though, and we got Baron Corbin making his entrance. The commentators just talked about kind of same along the same lines as that video package that aired, I think it was last week or the week before, where it was Corbin just talking about how, you know, he was getting his NFL paydays while the internet darlings were working for hot dogs and chips, you know, in a bingo hall, that kind of thing. And his opponent was already in the ring, and interestingly enough, it was former TNA wrestler Jesse Sorensen, the one who broke his neck and was promised by Dixie Carter a position for life, and he was hired in the office, and then, as far as I can tell, he's still living, and they fired him. So, that spot for life. Way to go, Dixie. But nonetheless, yeah, and I guess things aren't faring for him too well in NXT either, because he got squashed by Baron Corbin in about 20 seconds in the second match of the night. End of days, that's that. Let's move on. Backstage, Tyler Breeze barged into William Regal's office, and he demanded to know who his opponent for TakeOver Brooklyn was. Regal told Tyler Breeze he kind of got a smile on his face. He knows where this is going. He said, you know, I've gone to the ends of the earth to find an opponent for you. And then he kind of leaned in close, and he goes, you should be careful what you wish for. And then he ordered Breeze, get out of my office, or something like, you know, I've had enough of you, leave. And Tyler Breeze pauses for a minute, completely no-sells what Regal just said, looks around, and then he goes, I'm busy, I'm leaving, and he walks out. I don't know, William Regal is comedic gold. We saw it with Bad Cardio Bull Dempsey a couple weeks ago, which we'll get into Bad Cardio Bull Dempsey shortly, but, I think he's, I mean, William Regal is the best comedic persona they have in WWE. I mean, by leaps and bounds. He really doesn't get that much of a chance to show it, but thank God they're letting him show it in NXT, because these little things that he's doing, and, you know, guys like Bull and Breeze, to their credit, kind of, you know, obviously they're not at Regal's comedic level, but they're hanging in there and they're playing their part. They're filling the role they need to fill for Regal's reactions to get the laugh. I don't know. I William Regal as the GM is just the best thing ever. We came back into the arena, and the team of Jason Jordan and Chad Gable were making their entrance. Their opponents were already in the ring. As I noted, one of them was Elias Sampson, and the other one is in white sweatpants. Looked like a total jabroni. I mean, not that, you know, he had a decent look. He had like a big fro that was kind of tied back, and I mean, you know, but a fine looking guy, but I mean, not in white sweatpants, my god. Third match of the show, Gable and Jordan versus Samson, and this sweat-panted man, Valenzuela Jr. They kept saying his first name. It sounded like Lance Valenzuela Jr., but I don't think that was it, so I just went with Valenzuela Jr., and that's that. This was pretty much Jordan and Gable, a showcase for them, although they did give up a little bit more offense to the other team than I would have liked to see. Jordan and Gable just used their amateur stuff, and you know, Jordan used like an amateur takedown, and then Gable came in and did kind of this early match spot that he's been doing. It's just him completely clowning on his opponent. Like, he's able to take him down at will. He'll like throw him in some kind of leg lace grapevine kind of thing, and then, you know, he'll do a wrestling roll over them and grab a gator lock, you know, a headlock, that kind of thing, and then he'll transition over and he'll tie the guy up in a pretzel. Like, just this kind of thing is going to make Gable really successful if he can make that stuff entertaining going forward. So it was a lot of that, and then eventually the team of Samson and Valenzuela Jr. took control of Gable. Around the 4-minute mark, though, Gable used a judo throw, tagged Jordan in. Jordan came in hot with a big belly-to-belly toss, and then what I didn't like about this match is that Gable gave up a lot of offense to the other team, and then he made the hot tag to Jordan. Jordan came in and hit essentially one move with a big belly-to-belly toss, and then he tagged in Gable again, who came in essentially fresh as a daisy to hit their finish. And I, you know, maybe give up a little bit of offense and then make a comeback, let Jordan run wild for a little bit more and then come back. I don't know. It just seemed weird to have Gable take, you know, maybe 2 minutes of a beating and then come back after maybe 5-10 seconds fresh as a daisy to hit the finish. But nonetheless, they did hit their awesome finish, which that double team tossing back suplex that they do, which they're calling Amplitude. And Gable and Jordan got the win in about 4.5 minutes. Fine showing, not as good as the opening tag match, but two tag matches in one show, two or more teams looking competent in the show. I mean, again, grading on the NXT tag division curve, it's a hell of a start. We went backstage where Devon Taylor was standing with Dana Brooke and Emma, and this was a maybe Dana Brooke's best promo yet. This was good, except for one awkward little thing early. Devon Taylor was just gonna ask. She was kind of talking about how she was gonna go in the direction of Dana. This is the night you've been waiting for. This is the match that you've been waiting for. But before she could get to that point, Dana Brooke cut her off and said, "This is the night that Charlotte has been dreaming of." Yes, she said dreaming. She meant to say dreaming. I don't know why they couldn't have redone this, gotten a better take, but she said dreaming. But then she recovered nicely, and she actually recovered, and things went very well. She said, "Charlotte's afraid of her." She said, "If you remember, Charlotte even attacked me from behind. And how did that end for her? I laid her out." Brooke said that she took out the fitness world. Now she's going to take on this one. She said she's going to serve Charlotte's eviction notice, and the Total Diva will be taking over the NXT Divas division. She said. Then she looked like she was gonna pat Devin on the head, as she is known to do. And then she said, "You know what, Devin? Tonight's too important for that. And I really like that." And she took off. And then she came back and she said, "Psych!" And she patted Devin on the head and walked away. And yeah, like I noted, this was good from Dana Brooke. She's very much improving in terms of her kind of just her presence on the microphone, the way she carries herself and comes across. I still think she's got some work to do in the ring. I mean, definitely still some work to do on the mic too. Let's not kid ourselves. But she's progressing. Let's not be ignorant of that. We went backstage where, oh boy, Bull Dempsey was in William Regal's office eating a bag of chips, and Regal just leans into Bull's ear and he goes, "Bull, I think you have a problem." And then I don't know if I love this or I hate this. I think I hate this because it's like cheesy and not believable. But Regal says this, and then it's like dream sequence. And it goes into a Bull Dempsey fat vignette where it's just like Bull eating chips backstage and getting winded running around the ring and you know, eating candy bars and trying to smash the vending machine to get the candy bar when the vending machine stole his money. And then, my God, it happened. Bull looks into the camera in one of these you know, skits that they had cut in, and he says, "It's time to get bullfit." Jesus. Oh my God. And at this point, the montage changed. And it is no longer dramatic music fat Bull Dempsey. This is. It goes into Pepe's 1980s workout music. Like, picture Richard Simmons workout music. And Bull is now on camera in bright green Zubaz, a highlighter green tank top, a highlighter green sweatbands and shoes and socks. This is ridiculous. And then it goes into a montage of him just failing miserably at working out while other Performance Center trainees are training around him. You know, there was one where I don't know, there's one where he was running upstairs, and over the course of the entire montage, he makes it up the flight of stairs one time, and by the time he gets to the top, he collapses at the top. And then there's one where it looks like he's struggling and struggling to climb the rope ladder. He's pulling himself up inch by inch, and then once he gets to a certain point, you're able to see, oh, he's sitting on a guy's shoulders, and a guy is lifting him up. Yes, it's funny, but where the hell is this going? He said, I don't know if they're going Bo Dallas with him or what, but he said, "The only thing stopping you from being your best is you." He said that he wants everyone to get bullfit. And then it closed with this cheesy, straight out of 1980s workout video graphic, you know, like rainbow background and Bull badly superimposed on the front of it, pointing at the camera, and in bad, cheesy graphic letters, it says, "It's time to get bullfit." And it ends. Like, did I accidentally drop some acid before this segment, or like, what the hell did I just see? Me and Jason Powell and myself, actually, this is a little bit of a spoiler, I guess, but next week we're both going to be on vacation, and so for in place of the .NET Weekly audio show, we're doing a NXT roster evaluation, and he at one point he asks, "Is this a rib on Bull? Like, is there?" Where are they going with this? Is this something, you know, coming out of something maybe true to life? And I kind of speculated, you know, maybe it's a case of, you know, he was caught eating junk food around the Performance Center, or they found a junk food wrapper and attributed to him, something along those lines. And My God, what else could it be? Like, what else could it be? Well, they're fat shaming this guy. I mean, maybe now it's gonna go in the direction of he is gonna get bull fit and he's gonna get in shape and he's gonna come back new and improved. Maybe we're gonna get these bad training montages each week. Like, I don't know. We'll see where it goes. It's good for a chuckle, but it's not good for Bull. That's for damn sure. We came back into the arena where we got Charlotte making her entrance, and she was followed by Dana Brooke, who, of course, had Emma by her side. And in the fourth match of the show, we got a real disappointment, is what we got. This was Charlotte versus Dana Brooke in the match that they've been building up virtually since Dana Brooke's debut. She's been targeting Charlotte, cutting promos on her, attacking her in the ring, beatdown angles. And how did they think to pull this all together? How is this big heated feud that they've been building and seemingly could continue to build bigger? How do they see the next step? The next step in this going? Charlotte beating her clean in 3.5 damn minutes. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Let's go through this match anyway. Dana was booed loudly, but there were definitely a couple of pro-Dana signs right opposite a hard cam, and there was a vocal minority, a very minority, but vocal minority of fans who were behind Dana. There were dueling chants of "Let's go, Dana," and then just a ridiculous, resoundingly loud "Dana sucks" chant in response to that. Dana settled things. She got the better of Charlotte early and was getting the better of her after a little bit of back and forth, but settled into a bow and arrow stretch and just kind of began to talk trash to Charlotte. Then Charlotte fought out. She hit her neck breaker. She hit the spear. She hit natural selection, and she pinned her. What the actual hell? What the hell? Like, I'm almost at a loss for words. I know Charlotte is like the benchmark. Or the way they have her positioned on, storyline wise, she's the benchmark of the women's division. You know what I mean? She's the first Divas champion, the legacy diva there. But Dana Brooke is the lady you're trying to establish, and she has not proven that she's not capable yet. She's not shown, okay, it's time to move on past me right now. It's time to. She has not shown that it's time to beat her in 3 damn minutes in the first big showing that she's had. This really pissed me off when I was watching it. It's something I guess they can continue if they have, Dana comes back next week and beats Charlotte down or something like that. But like even then, like what's the point? We've seen that Charlotte can beat her in 3.5 minutes. Maybe we'll see Dana Brooke go on some sort of a run for the next 3 or 6 months, and then she'll call Charlotte back down to NXT for a special feud or something. I got killed by you last time, but I feel like I've grown and become, a stronger competitor, more well-rounded. Now I want another chance, something like that. But this was shit. I mean, the match itself wasn't, but like, you're gonna go 3.5 minutes with this. What a waste. What a waste of a build. What a waste of just a chance to make Dana Brooke something more than this green diva who was pushed a little bit out of the gate and now is getting smothered. Like, way to just take away a whole lot of her steam. She didn't get any of it back with a post-match attack. Nothing. I mean, this was really, really disappointing. I very rarely point out resounding, just astonishing negatives in NXT because usually it's, whether it's middle of the road or slightly above average, it's never really bad. This was bad from a storyline point of view, from just a it just I didn't get this, and I'm really frustrated by it. So, shame on you guys. Not the ladies, whoever put this together that way. But yeah, we went backstage to Samoa Joe, and he was just talking about how, a lot of people are kind of questioning, "Joe, why are you in NXT?" And he said very simply, "I want the NXT championship." And then he called out Rhino. He said Rhino's made it clear that he has the same goal. He said that he wanted to be NXT champion, and so the way I see it, he's in my way. I want to face him next week because he's one of the guys in my way. He said that Rhino is an aggressive animal, but I'm gonna beat him down and I'm gonna choke him out. And that was that. A little bit surprised they let him say choke him out. I mean, for anybody who's read Daniel Bryan's book, maybe it's something they've relaxed a little bit since that incident took place. But he got in trouble for both spitting on John Cena and for choking Justin Roberts. And we had Joe saying that he was gonna choke somebody out here. And we even had Kevin Owens on Raw. This is a side note. Kevin Owens spitting on somebody, and I tweeted at the moment, I was like, "Didn't Owens read Bryan's book? None of that. Like, you can't do that." So yeah, some of these new these new indie guys are starting to, push the envelope a little bit, so to speak. Yeah, I don't know if it's anything that they're gonna get talked to or if it's just whatever, but just kind of stuck out to me because I just read the Brian book, so it's stuck out in my mind. Now this right here, as we move along, is where I have a real discrepancy because I cover the show live as it airs on the network every single week, as segment by segment, as well as I'm able to. Once in a while, I'll fall, fall slightly behind, and so I'll pause my feed and I will, just catch up with, 10, 20 seconds, whatever I need to just type up and finish up whatever I'm going, and then I'll resume and go from there. And so I'm still essentially live, maybe a few minutes behind on the website. Well, I did that this week, and we get to this part, and as I recall, it goes right from the end of Joe to a backstage segment with William Regal. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me go to that, and then I'll get into what I was getting into. Whoops. William Regal's backstage just talking about how he's not knowing if Kevin Owens hitting him in the during the contract signing last week was intentional or just reactionary. And when he was saying that, Kevin Owens approached him, and Owens looked Regal dead in the eye, completely serious, completely genuine, and said, "I sincerely apologize. I was in fight or flight mode. It was completely instinctual, and I sincerely apologize for what I did." He never once broke character. He shot what looked to be a very genuine smile at William Regal, and then he walked off. And if you didn't know better, if you didn't know the Kevin Owens character, you'd be like, "Wow, this guy feels genuinely bad for what he did." In reality, he knew that what he did was at risk of him losing that NXT title shot. You punch the general manager, he's gonna punish you somehow. You know that you're gonna get in his bad graces and something bad is gonna happen potentially. You're gonna get suspended or whatever the case may be. And so Owens puts on his absolute friendliest face, the most good guy you'll ever see, Kevin Owens. Hell, Owens is gonna be a babyface someday, and he'll be less believable as a babyface than he was here. But yeah, so this was great. But then as he walked off, Regal just looked into the camera and he says, "I can't wait to see Owens get truly, truly beaten down in Brooklyn." This is great. And then Regal walked off. So okay, that was fine. Now this is where the discrepancy airs. Occurs because, as I recall, it goes right from that to a Rhino vignette. But then Darren Gundridge, my companion over here, ProWrestling.net co-staffer, does the Ring of Honor audio show weekly here. He texted me and he goes, "The Kevin Owens match is missing from your report." And as I recall, I post the spoilers every month when they go up. And we also post them live on the site each week as before the show airs as well. And I had looked through the spoilers because I use them to kind of format my coverage before I start live coverage. And I noted that the fifth match of the show is Kevin Owens versus Martin Stone. Martin Stone, a former developmental guy who they released in April of last year. And I noted that it might have been a dark match because at the time that was before Kevin Owens' United States Championship match with John Cena, and Owens was out without the title. And so I figured, who knows if they, it could just be something they stick in the middle of the show, give the live crowd Owens, a little bit of their money's worth and that kind of thing. And I figured that it may be a dark match, but lo and behold, and then when it comes to covering it live on the show, covering the show live, that segment was nowhere to be seen. And at least not for me. It's possible that like somehow I had paused it enough times for my feed to skip and catch up live with the feed just enough to completely miss this segment, which is possible, but it doesn't seem entirely likely. And so then I went back on the network this morning before I started recording, and I noticed that it is included in there along with an Eva Marie promo, which I'll run through in a minute. And the timestamp on this show is on the on-demand version is 59 minutes and 36 seconds, and they don't get 59 minutes of airtime live on the network when the show airs live. The show usually wraps up 5 to 10 minutes shy of the top of the hour. Usually, it goes from about 8 o'clock to about 8:50 or 8:55. So I'm thinking that for some reason they cut the Eva Marie promo and this Kevin Owens match out of the live feed, and I missed it in my coverage because if it aired, I mean, there's no way I would have skipped it unless God, unless I had some sort of bizarre blackout occurrence or something like that. But like, no, I think the most, it seems odd, really odd, and it doesn't make sense to me, but I think the most reasonable thing is that they probably cut it from the live feed for some reason, and it is included in the on-demand feed. So if you watch this on demand and you're wondering why is it not covered in my live coverage, that's why. Sorry about that, but I'll get into it here. Before that match, though, there was a quick Eva Marie promo. She was backstage with Devin, and she just basically told Sasha Banks, the NXT Women's Champion, that she's coming for her. So Sasha had better watch out. I don't think Sasha has to be too worried. Then we went to Kevin Owens coming into the NXT arena, and his opponent was already in the ring. And as I noted, it was former developmental guy Martin Stone, the Governor Martin Stone. I forget what he wrestles as now. I probably could look it up, but I don't really care that much. And I didn't know that it was going to be happening, so yeah, I'm underprepared for this match. But it was basically just Owens putting a beatdown on him for a couple of minutes, hitting the pop-up powerbomb and getting the win. And then post-match, Owens did the powerbomb into the ring apron. So hey, guy, you got fired last year, and now you got apron powerbombed and written off this year. That's not so good. That's not good. Maybe it'll make his indie payday go up, but I don't know. He for what it's worth, he is somebody who still picks up very, very regular bookings over on the UK indie scene, as well as around some independent shows in Florida and elsewhere. He was in for some indie shows in Florida, which is, you know, in the area, which is why he worked this NXT show here. Interesting, nonetheless, that they would bring him back. I don't know if it was to bring him back to take a look at him, maybe how he's grown and see if he's worth bringing back, or if it was just, hey, you know, I mean, I really don't know. It's completely me speculating. I have no idea why they would do it, but it just is interesting. When we came back, we got a Rhino vignette, and it was pretty good. It was just clips of him, you know, being Rhino, and then it closed with him, what else but vowing to rip everyone in half with the gore, gore, gore. Came back into the arena, and it was main event time. As the Vaudevillains made their entrance, and the champions Blake and Murphy, along with Alexa Bliss, were out next. Full in-ring introductions for both teams, and in the, well, I guess in reality it was the sixth match of the show, but it was the fifth for me. It was the NXT Tag Team Champions Blake and Murphy defending the tag titles against the Vaudevillains. This was a good match, actually a very good match. It was Gotch looked really, really good early. He got the better of I forget who he was in the ring with, but he missed a drop kick, but then he came right back. One of the guys came in like charging with a clothesline, and Gotch used an absolutely picture perfect flying armbar takedown right into a cross armbar, and it was awesome. Like if they were to ever do that spot, I mean this was a believable near flash finish. Like guy charges with the clothesline, Gotch catches him flying armbar, tap him out. Like it was that believable. It was that fluid looking. I mean anybody who follows MMA to any extent knows how believable the cross armbar is, which is like. So when Alberto Del Rio was doing it back in the day, and he was holding it for, you know, on Christian for 30 seconds, as fully extended as Christian flops and flails around the ring, it's like, that's bullshit. As soon as that guy breaks that grip and gets a wrench on your arm, you're gonna tap out in 5 seconds, or he's probably gonna break your arm. But nonetheless, this was a great near flash finish. And then, as kind of was the story of the match, English tagged in, and he was the one who fell behind. But actually, to English's credit, he used, before the last commercial break, a really fantastic series of arm drags. He had fallen behind a little bit, and the Blake and Murphy were looking to double team him, and then but he came back with like a great double arm wringer, and then he charged with like some other kind of double arm drag, and then he used like a Japanese double arm drag. This was awesome. English looked great here. We went into the last break, and then we came back. Gotch once again was in control, and then Aiden English tagged in, and once again, as I noted the story of the match, he fell behind. Blake and Murphy took control of him. But then there was a cool spot where I don't recall exactly how it happened. I don't know if it was English kind of tossing him over the top or sidestepping, but either way, he sent English. English sent one of either Blake or Murphy basically into a plancha over the top rope onto the other, whether it was Blake or Murphy, and like a picture perfect plancha, but. You know, he did it to his own partner. It was great. But as soon as they got back in the ring, Blake and Murphy managed to take control with a distraction. And the crowd cracked themselves up and me because they were chanting, I believe they were chanting this at Wesley Blake, who has his hair dyed like platinum blonde. They were chanting, "Come on, Barbie, let's go party." Clap, 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 clap. "Come on, Barbie, let's go party." And they were cracking themselves up. It was pretty funny. English managed to send one of them into the ring post. Then Gotch came in hot, hit a bunch of good offense again, jumping double knee strike. English and Gotch look really good here. They set up the whirling dervish, but as English hit the ropes for the neck breaker part of it, Bliss grabbed his foot. With that distraction, English was rolled up from behind with a handful of tights. Blake and Murphy retained their tag team titles in about 6.5 minutes. Post-match, the Vaudevillains fought back. They put a beat down on Blake and Murphy, but not like a heelish beat down. It was just them kind of retaining their heat, getting, their comeuppance, and they hit the whirling dervish, that the uppercut neck breaker combo that they do. Then they surrounded Alexa Bliss, and they started to kind of swirl her, like, walk around her, like, stalking their prey. The crowd was a little bit concerned, but then they thought, no, these guys know way better than that. We know what they're all about. And so they chanted, "Chivalry, chivalry." And true to form, the Vaudevillains then backed up to the ring ropes, and they both held them for her, and they offered for her to leave the ring first. True gentlemen they are. But instead, Bliss, being the witch that she is, looked at them both and just slapped him in the face really hard. And then she left the ring of her own power. And she regrouped with her tag team champions on the ramp. They backed up the ramp, held the titles high, and the Vaudevillains were not super thrilled in the ring, but they had regained their heat, I guess you would say, to close the show. And this was a fun main event. As I noted in my live coverage, it was not a takeover caliber match by any means. But as far as like a 6.5 minute tag match goes, this was really excellent. The Vaudevillains looked so good. For the first time, really, I mean, I don't know if. Yeah, it had to be something. Because they caught my eye more in this match than they ever have before. Like, ever. They. Almost in 1 week, they almost legitimized themselves in this match to me. Like, they looked so believable and so good. Their post-match fire that they showed in that beatdown, and just their kind of facials after they'd come up short but gotten their comeuppance to close the show holding the ring. Like, that to me, like, that sealed something for me a little bit. Like, it was just one step towards making them legitimate. Which is, again, in the audio that I mentioned that we'll be putting out with Jason Powell, I mentioned that I think they're just not quite serious enough, that they're. I don't know if they can be taken seriously because of what they are. On the main roster, that still may be true, but man, they took the right step here. I really enjoyed this. Blake and Murphy, they can hold up their end of a good match. They're pretty all right. They didn't necessarily stand out quite like the Vaudevillains did here, but this was a fun match. These two worked well together, and I enjoyed it a lot. And as this show goes, like, it wasn't a great show. In terms of just like, it wasn't a great show, but in terms of what it sought to accomplish and what, in the course of one episode, I think it was able to accomplish for that tag division, I think it was really good, really a successful show, maybe more than a good show. It established that you've got Gable and Jordan as a new hot tag team. You've got Dawson and Wilder as a new hot tag team, getting the win over a team who's already been pretty well established in Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy, who are again still in the mix. So three teams there: Blake and Murphy with the Vaudevillains. You've got the in one of the promos, the Hype Bros were mentioned. So you've got like five teams, maybe six if they get a couple other ones in the mix. Maybe Angelo Dawkins and Sawyer Fulton, or God, I'm struggling. I feel like I'm leaving out one team that they may have in the works going on, but either way, like, a division of like five teams is more than they've had ever. Especially five teams that, like, people know are capable of winning matches, are capable of, potentially winning those tag titles with just a little bit of a push. And it'll take a while to make that division credible to the extent of, like, where people are going to look forward to it, where it'll be, a talking point, so to speak, of the takeover shows and things like that. But it's possible. With some of these teams that have shown some real potential, it's possible. And so, thumbs up there. As I noted, I really, really, really detested what they did with Charlotte and Dana Brooke. Maybe they'll bounce back next week with something, and I'll look at this and say, okay, I can forgive it. But initial reaction is that that was completely dismal. Baron Corbin was Baron Corbin. We got some fun backstage skits, that truly bizarre one with Bull, but just, yeah, in terms of building this tag division, I thought the show was very successful. .NET members will be listening to me with Jason Powell this week on the .NET Weekly Audio Show, recapping the WWE conference call, And they will also be hearing me review and analyze one half of the NXT roster with Jason Powell on next week's .NET Weekly Audio Show. So, good time to sign up for ProWrestling.net membership if you are not a member already. I told you how to do that at the top of the show. It's ProWrestling.net, top of the page, membership info. Bottom of that page, there's a sign-up link right there. And, yeah, but as far as this show goes, guys, that's going to do it for me. I'll be talking to you later. Take care.